Okay.
So, again, what's going on now is just a sort of whirlwind review of basic network concepts. And so we'll start with, you know, getting a quick history of networks. Networks have existed for as long as humans have in any way organized themselves. Then we'll look at modern networks, so telephone networks, data networks, and sort of how they're organized. So again, networks have been around for a long, long time. So what the goal always was is to be able to communicate over a distance. So, okay. So pre-electronics, we had signifiers, semaphores, messengers on horseback. Actually, I was told that there was even a shouting system. So one guy would shout to the next guy, who would then turn around and shout to the next guy. Other audio things, drums, for instance. They've all used been used to, again, transmit information over a distance. Okay. So what we get is that there's a few basic characteristics shared by these networks that continue on to modern-day networks. We have point-to-point communication. So signifiers might be set atop hilltops, so you know, one's lit, the next guy sees it, he lights his fire, somebody farther on can see that one, the fire, etc. Okay. So, if we have semaphores, again, somebody is sort of pointing, looking specifically for that semaphore. They then have to relay that information, so there's the point-to-point communication, it has a distance limitation, so if you want to go farther than a single point-to-point, you have to relay the information. So you see your semaphore message, and then you turn around and signal it to the next station. If you're a messenger on horseback, your horse gets tired eventually, you get tired eventually, so you pass off your message to the next rider and horse. And resource sharing, so you can send multiple messages from the same station. We potentially even have the concept of security. Again, if you have semaphores, the meaning of any individual sequence of flags is private to you and your signalers. So, again, this desire to communicate over a distance and the basic tools to do it have been around for quite a while. We're interested in the electronic delivery of information, and specifically in the delivery of digital information. Okay. So, arguably, the telephone network is the oldest electronic network still of interest. So, the idea of the exchange was patented in 1878, so again, that allowed for the relaying of messages. It would have been built on the old telegraph networks. Its purpose was to carry voice signals, and a single type of data. Originally, it would have carried analog voice signals. It started carrying digitized voice signals in the 80s. Purely digitized signals. Since there was only a single sort of signal, they could, it had a single characteristic. So you needed, again, these 64 kilobit per second streams. And so, again, the telephone network evolved to carry that specific sort of signal with its specific characteristics of essentially needing a constant bandwidth. Okay. Now, again, data is carried as well as voice, and you can access the service on a packet-by-packet basis and not just sort of making a connection for a stream. Okay. So like any network, again, if you think of a wired system, your wire will only preserve the signal over a fixed length. After that, you have to recreate the signal and retransmit the signal. So your data has to be relayed to get it going a distance. We can't string wires between every household in the world. Therefore, we have to share a fixed number of connections. Any network that covers a large area and caters to a large population is going to start looking hierarchical. So you'll have an access, which is relatively low speed and allows the end users to connect in. And then you'll have a core, which doesn't deal with individual users, but just is dedicated to pushing large amounts of data from one point. Again, telephone networks started out trying to send these 64 kilobits per second streams of data, and so they started as what's called a circuit switch service, which means that they provided exactly that to the user, a pipe which would allow them to send just that amount. So when the user wanted to make a call, they had to set up a connection, and then these shared resources were reserved over that connection. So they were not shared for the duration of the connection, but were reserved for a single. And so that works really well for this uniform type of data. Okay. If you're trying to send other data over that connection, it will work maybe not so well. What issues factor into this connection? Well, it takes time to set up the connection. It takes time for your signal to physically travel. There's not much you can do about that. That's true of any system. And the amount of time it takes a signal to lose a loop ground fault is pretty much the same, no matter what sort of connection you're using. It's the same order of magnitude anyway. Okay, there's transmission delay. So how long does it take to form the signal? This provides a data pipe, so the delay is just how long it takes to form up a single bit. You know, once you've got your connection, you know exactly how many resources you have. So, for anything where you're sending, again, streams of data, that's all it takes. If you think about sending, again, a control signal, there's one little message you want to send, well, then you're wasting a lot of time for sort of setting up connections if you do it that way. Okay. So, again, cellular networks would have evolved from this sort of a network. Wires, telephony networks have evolved from this sort of a network. So, again, they're much more data oriented now. Okay. The other big network is the internet. And so this network arose roughly 100 years, not quite, a little bit under 100 years after the telephone network. And it's, again, had as original purposes to transmit small amounts of data, so to connect a dumb terminal to a mainframe, and such that that interest in relaying their keyboard strokes to their mainframe computer. Later, it became computer to computer, enabling the exchange of data from remote locations. Then it's the ability from user to user, different users' interfaces to applications. The ARPANET was started as a military project, so there was an idea that it should be robust in terms of failure, so that, you know, if part of your network got bombed, then you could still send your data. So again, the type of data that was originally sent on these networks had a much different characteristic than your voice stream. Yeah, it was this, these little pieces, and, you know, again, they're being generated as somebody types, so that's a bit random. The protocols arrived at to transmit this data are sort of encapsulated in the TCP/IP protocol suite. So IP is the core of this, so everything has an IP address, and so that's a location, and that is what's used to perform the relay. So you know how to from point A to point B. Okay. So this suite, but again, arose in the 70s and was adopted in the 80s, so at a similar time too. And the telephone network was digitizing. Okay. Its goal, again, was to send these little bits of data. Core to this was the idea of a packet. So you bundle up your data and then address it using your IP address. And then everything else follows from that, you know, someone deciding how to get it to its final address. So that was a much different idea about how you're sending data than in the telephone network. Okay, so we have the same concerns. We have to relay our data, so again, we can't be stringing wires between all the computers in the world. Since there's only a finite number of wires, they have to be shared. And then again, there's this idea of robustness, so if a bit of a network goes down, you can move around it. This led to the idea of, again, packet switch networks, where we bundled up our data into units with an address, and then that unit or packet was routed throughout the network from relay to relay to relay. We had a concept of efficiency that the resources now were allocated on an as-needed basis, so we didn't set up an end-to-end connection and reserve resources along it. Again, because that doesn't make sense if you're just sending one little TDP piece of data. The impacts on delivery are that, you know, again, you have propagation, the signal has to travel. You have now larger transmission delays. So now you're not just forming up, you're not just sending it a bit at a time, but you have to form up your entire packet. Okay. And since the way it's set up, each of the relays has to make a decision about that packet, it needs to examine the packet, then at each relay, you have to examine the packet and reform it. So you have to receive it, examine it, retransmit it. So transmission delays occur at each node now in the network. The idea of allocating resources on an as-needed basis also leads to queuing delays. Since we're not reserving the resource, it may be that you have more of these packets that need to go in a certain direction than you have capacity to send them. And then, essentially, they're just going to queue up and wait. So you gain in that you're not setting up a circuit, but you lose in the sense that you've got additional delays and potentially variable delays. Okay, so we have this historical divergence of networks that mainly comes from whether you want to be efficient at transmitting a voice signal or efficient at transmitting this bursty data traffic. But, and so our wireless networks, so our wired networks have evolved from those points. Our wireless networks have evolved from the wired networks. But we also have this idea that in the wired realm, where the networks now cater to all sorts of traffic, so again, the telephone network carries data packet traffic. The internet carries voice traffic. So the networks have evolved to handle all sorts of traffic. And we'll see that this same sort of evolution has occurred in wireless networks as well. So from a cellular perspective, we've gone from carrying specifically a voice signal to now carrying packets. based traffic, sometimes exclusively, and from a data network, so like a Wi-Fi network, we've gone from providing our basic access to, and going, hang on, we need to look at quality of service issues. So if our traffic is not of this basic type, but rather it is, say, a voice signal, then we need to see how we can cater for that. Okay. So, and there's certain network concepts that are fairly fundamental to any discussion of networks, and so we're going to just mention them in this lecture. Again, you would have discussed them at some level in any sort of basic networks course you have. Okay, so the first of these is network services. So basically, how does a network provide a delivery service for data? And we've already seen some of the parameters along which that happens. So either a connection-oriented service or a connectional service. So if you set up the connection beforehand or not, how would you cater for quality of service? Basically, catering for quality of service has to do with how resources then are allocated. And so again, are these done as a sort of allocation beforehand, or allocation on an as-needed basis? Data networks then are constructed using a layered network architecture, so that's just a way of splitting up the different delivery concerns in a way that makes sense for networks. And again, what we'll sort of see throughout the course is that how you decide to do this is going to impact on how you can provide these any sort of guarantees for your applications and the data that you transmit. Okay, so none of this is directly examinable, but it just helps to have it sort of at the back of the mind to understand the networks as we go through. Okay. So, your network essentially consists of, again, connected relay points. So, what exactly is being forwarded from at the relay depends again on what sort of choices you made. And that basically boils down to you can either have a circuit switch network or a packet switch network. And in a circuit switch network, a connection is made and the resources are reserved over that connection. And so what that gives you is a fixed rate stream. And typically, if there's an error, then you just lose your data. The other option then is have a packet switch network. And so for the packet switch network, again, the data is being broken up into chunks, and each chunk then gets addressed and sent through the network to its destination. Okay. And we'll see that there's within that sort of a number of ways of transmitting relaying the data. But one of the basic principles there is that again, the resources will not be reserved ahead of time. So if there's more if there's more packets than capacity to transmit them, you're going to start, you're going to wait. Okay. And again, we'll see that the layered architecture is a good way of organizing all the tasks that are needed to manage this transmission. Okay. So there's now a move towards all IP networks, so voice is losing its sort of special status in the data world. So from now on, we're going to be talking about packets and IP networks. Okay. So, if we think about packets, then at a very abstract level, we can say that what the network offers is a data transport service. And so it offers to get your packet from point A to point B. And there's two permutations on this. It can promise you it'll get there or not. And for the end user, it can either set up a special connection from user to user or not. There's nothing in that basic setup that's reverse to quality service or security or any of these other.
Okay.
So you have two parameters with two choices each. So that allows you four different possibilities. You can have unreliable or unreliable connection-oriented service, or reliable or unreliable. Connection-less service, depending on your type of data, then one or the other might suit better. Now, all of the one thing to think about is that any of these services is technically available on any sort of network. You just have to do enough work to make it happen. Okay. So, again, the original design of our networks, either our telephone or data network, was aimed to support a single one of these services. So, telephone networks, you have a connection-oriented service, and for data networks, you have a connection-less service. And so, again, this had an impact on how resources were shared out in the network. And so that was done either by circuit switching or packet switching. And again, circuit switching is more compatible with a connection-oriented service. Packet switching is more compatible with a connection-less service. But you can provide either. Okay. quality of service sort of has to be built in on top of that basic allocation.
And so again, circuit switching, we reserve our resources end to end, and there is no sharing of the resources in the circuit. Okay. Again, it leads to a more regular guaranteed performance for the data delivery. So you can say something about sort of the rate at which data can be delivered. But yeah, the trade-off is, well, for one, you need to set up your calls, and for two, once you've reserved those resources, they cannot be further shared, so you may not be using your network efficiently. Okay, so again, for circuit switching, we have the idea that we want to use our network resources more efficiently. So we divide our data up into pieces and then allocate the network resources to the pieces of data. So when they need to be transmitted, they're transmitted. If there's a piece or packet requiring transmission, then it will then the resource will be used. So it's not reserved for a specific point-to-point connection, and therefore you can be assured that if there's work to be done, it will be being done. Okay. Now, the last comment is the link. The physical link can support multiple virtual links at a given time by, you know, again, subdividing the resources. So we can either divide our transmission bandwidth into subbands, or we can send signals sort of turn and turn about. Okay. And so again, we won't belabor this point. We'll talk a good bit more about frequency and dividing up the spectrum into frequency subchannels later. But again, that's going to allow specific subchannels, which again divide and reserve or shared among multiple packets. And for time, again, you can just sort of have some sort of turn and turnabout system. Okay. So, again, in terms of, typically, your communication is between two end users. So, if you have a packet switch system, the end-to-end data stream is divided into packets. Each packet is addressed separately. They're then transmitted into the network. So they use a channel completely when being transmitted. And then again, the resources are used as they're needed. Since you'll have multiple users sending things into the network, it's possible that you have more demand for the resources than resources, and so then you'll get
congestion or queuing, which leads to delay.
The sharing of the resources on as-needed basis is referred to as statistical multiplexing. And so again, the packets arrive and they queue up and they're transmitted out as soon as possible.
So the plus of this, again, is that as long as there's something to be transmitted, it'll be transmitted.
The downside, again, is that any arriving packet may find 5 packets, 10 packets, 100 packets in front of it, and that'll add to its delay.
Even in the ideal case, where there is no queue at the nodes, there's still an additional source of delay in terms of store and forward nature of packet transmission. So any node or relay is going to have to examine the packet to decide where to transmit it next. And so that means that each packet is retransmitted at each node. So it has to be fully received and then fully reformed. Okay. So that means you initially transmit the packet, so it takes 'whatever the length of the packet is divided by your transmission speed, and then at every node, you have to do that again. Okay. So the more nodes you encounter, the more delay you incur. So queuing leads to, again, packets having to wait, and so to experience delay and to experience an unpredictable amount of delay. So it's not just that they're delayed, but you also can't really say how long they're going to be delayed. At an extreme, if the congestion is too bad, well, there's only a finite amount of space to hold the packets, so at some point you'll also start dropping packets. So queuing leads not only to delay, but also potentially to loss. Okay.
Okay. So why use it? Again, because it's so much more efficient in terms of using their links. It's a fairly contrived example. We've got a 1 megabit per second link. Each user needs 100 kilobits per second when they're transmitting, but again, they're only transmitting 10% of the time. Okay. So if we were to reserve our connections for the users, then you could only have 10 users active in the network. But if we use packet switching, then what we note is that we could have 35 users. And the probability that any 10 are active at the same time is extremely low. So you could have those 35 users and you really wouldn't even be incurring any congestion penalties. So packet switching allows for much more efficient sharing of resources, assuming, again, that your users are not.
Okay.
So, in terms of quality of service, circuit switching has a lot to be desired. In particular, you can guarantee the bit rate, and you have some handle on loss, because loss is only happening via bit errors, not due to dropped packets. The penalty you can pay for that is, again, in terms of for the end users, you have a connection set up for the network itself, you're tying up your resources. Packet switched, again, you're adding a delay and variability in delay, and also loss. Okay. But again, from a network perspective, but it's a much more efficient use of resources. Okay. So,
in terms of packet and circuit switching, in practice, networks tend to be a bit of a combination of the two. So, from an end user perspective, it's packet switching at the core, where again we're just pushing lots of data through. You tend to a lot of times drop back to a circuit switch, which you don't know exactly how much data you're getting through.
Okay, so how are packet switch networks arranged?
The answer to that is that they're designed in a layered architecture where, again, the layers address different concerns within the
within the network. So, I mean, if you think about it, if you want to start with just a point-to-point connection, well, you have to think about how exactly are you getting even bits from point-to-point. So that's the physical transmission. Okay, so you solve that problem. How do you form up the bits into something that you understand? So these chunks or packets, and how do you ensure that the packets arrive the way you expect them to? That's the second part of the problem, referred to as the data link transmission. And so, okay, so now we've got packets going from point to point, but as we say, we need to relay them on. And we need to relay them on in such a way that eventually they get to the end point. Okay, so that's another piece of the puzzle. And then finally, end-to-end, we do need to possibly set up some connection between the end applications, because that's another piece of the puzzle. The applications also have to understand each other. That's another piece of the puzzle. Okay. And what you can see is that, in that case, each piece is going to rely on the piece below it. Okay, so in order to
get a packet from end to end, you have to be able to get the bits from end to end in order to move a packet from point A to point B. Well, you have to be able to move it over each of the links. So that led to this idea of having a layered architecture. This breaks up these different concerns into sort of separate layers, and so then you can design each layer however you want, as long as it again interacts with with the adjacent layers in the appropriate fashion. So again, why do you do this for the usual reason? If you have a modular system, it's easier to upgrade portions of the system and to design, redesign without having to change the entire system. Okay. Now there's two layered architectures that are typically talked about. There's the one that exists and underpins the internet, and that's the TCP/IP protocol stack. And this is an implemented architecture. Okay. And so, in terms of layers, we have essentially what I just talked about. We start out with a physical implementation. How do we send bits? So we've got bits going from point A to point B. Then we say, well, how do we make the bits into packets? And maybe ensure that the packets are actually getting there, okay. Once we've got packets going from point A to point B, how do we get them over multiple hops? How do we get them where they're supposed to go in the end? How do we set up a connection between end users so that possibly we can get more than one packet and set up a link, and at the and sort of interface with the network, and then finally, yeah, just how are the users actually using this? Okay.
So, in addition to just this idea of having the layers, and again, each layer relying on the layer before, we also have this idea of what's called encapsulation, which refers to how we package up the data. And specifically, each layer that's passing data to the layer below it will add header information. So we'll add a portion of that information separate to the data, and as the packet or as the data works its way down, each one will add separate pieces of information. Therefore, all that any layer needs to examine is the information relating to its piece of, to its functionality, so its header. Okay, so what we see is the message goes to the transport layer, which is going to add a header. Now, the header plus the message is then passed down to the network layer, which just regards all of that as data and adds its own header to it, which we've lost. Okay. Okay, there we go. And so then that's passed down to the link layer, which is just going to view all that as a sequence of bits and add its own header. And
and that finally will get physically transmitted. Okay. So, again, the significance of that is that the various layers are not, say, encoding the whole message. As of the, you know, they're not changing those bits. They're only, again, adding their own information. Okay. So again, the TCP/IP protocol stack is something that's implemented, and it's an example of this layered architecture. So at the same time, people were going around implementing all that. Another group were talking about it, and so the OSI reference model was born, and this was an agreement about essentially what layers should be in the network in order to sort of facilitate the smooth design. Okay. And what we see is that we have similar layers. We've got physical layer, a link layer, a network layer, a transport layer. Then, instead of application, we have application, presentation, and session. Basically, nobody's really done much with presentation and session. They were driven by, again, the telephone telephony view. Okay. So, presentation allows for interpretation of the data, encryption, compression, etc. Session is sort of maintenance of the connectivity. If these, the view today is that if these are necessary services, then the application can just be bundled into the application layer, but they're not standardized. Okay. So there is a good deal of with the exception of, again, the presentation and session layer, there's a fairly close translation between what's happening in TCP/IP and the OSI model. But it should be, you can note a couple of things about OSI. One, it was the first to sort of explicitly discuss the concepts behind the layered model. So the idea of service provision, the idea of having an interface, so the two layers sort of had a uniform way of communicating, and then so that you had protocols within that. And it also layered the numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and to this day, people will refer to their discussion, will reference that numbering system in discussion for that. I'm dealing with a layer 2 issue, I'm dealing with a layer 4 issue. Okay.
So, within that, well, we will look at a good bit of stuff down at the physical layer because we need to understand specifically the radio transmission of bits. Okay. In terms of the data link layer, so getting packets point to point, again, there's typically two main functions. They have to make sure the
transmission of packets is correct. So you get the idea of having to resend packets if they're not received correctly. But more of interest to us is this layer also is responsible for the sharing of the medium. Okay. So it decides how users get a slice of the medium. And again, that's for wireless systems, that sharing is already shared. They're going out resources and it's already shared medium. This can be significant. But again, we'll look at Wi-Fi specifically, and also WiMAX.
Okay, so in terms of the network layer,
again, there's routing and addressing. So routing we'll consider in the context of ad hoc networks. Again, a lot of the issues we discuss for a lot of the time is just you have a wireless access point essentially. And then, so you're only dealing with one hop. But we will look what happens when you have multiple hops, and again, things are just going every which way. Addressing can be significant. And in particular, for end users that typically don't have a single IP address, but are sort of loaned one by their access providers. And so if they're moving from point to point to point, how do you keep that up? And that's, so there's a mobile IP issue there. That's not one we cover. So the transport layer, again, provides end-to-end connectivity between processes. So again, the network is getting packets from point A to point B physically, but then you need to at your end computer, how do you know what program to send it to? Well, the transport layer takes care of that. And so it can provide you either a connection-oriented or a connectionless service, so for the end applications. And so it does play a role in quality of service. I'd say we don't really consider it. Probably in the lab, we'll be having to do TCP and UDP. But in general, yeah, it's a little higher up than we're going to move.
Okay, so again, and then you have the applications, so you have the programs running on distributed
devices. For instance, you can be trying to stream your video from a server somewhere, etc. We're not going to look at specific applications, but again, we will go. We have this idea of having traffic classes and types of traffic that's generated, and then those types of traffic are looking to the network to get certain services, certain amounts of resources, and how do we try and provide that?
Okay. So, again, it's
good to have this layered architecture in mind. And if you have, again, data, wireless data networks that evolve from that, they do adhere pretty much to the layered architecture. Cellular networks start out as circuit switch, and so
any packet vault handle has been bolted on, and they are not really constructed in this layer fashion. Although, having said that, the control tends to be stacked like that. So, you have to be a bit careful in terms of keeping that straight in your head. Okay, again, a lot of people, if you're looking at performance in wireless networks, a lot of times you will say that cross-layer approaches are desirable, but we won't be addressing that in this module. Okay. So, in terms of references, for basic networking, Tannenbaum is a classic. There's not really any updates on that. There's probably newer versions of Stallings and Kurz and Ross update regularly. So there's all of these are in the library. So if you've gone through a basic networks course, you're fine. You'll sort of pick up what you need along the way. If you haven't, you might want to actually check one of these out and have a look.
So in terms of this course,
again, we have to go through some characteristics of our radio transmission just to see why wireless is different from wired and how things are set up because of the wireless links. We'll then look at various examples of wireless networks, so cellular networks, and we'll look at them sort of in an abstract way and then say a little bit about sort of how actual cellular networks are set up. Then various data-oriented networks. So these all belong in that 802 family. And we'll be looking at MAC and quality of service issues for that. But then we'll say a little bit about routing and ad hoc networks. The assignment, will simulate some aspects of an 802.11 network and explore with that. It will be based on NS3 network simulator version 3. Okay, and you'll get more information about that hopefully shortly. Oops. Okay. So that's it for today. And so next week we'll start looking at radio transmission systems. Actually, we'll start looking at transmission systems, and we'll take a couple weeks to get then to the radio aspects of them. So I will see you guys next Thursday. Bye.